This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Death is one of those topics that most of us would rather avoid, but planning for it can help spare your family from some of the emotional pain. And joining us to talk about how to approach end-of-life conversations and the importance of sharing your wishes with loved ones, our Associate Medical Director with Bluegrass Care Navigators, Dr. Nanette Bernalis, and from the Hospice of Cincinnati, President and CEO Sandra Lobert, and Project Administrator Barbara Rose. And I should note that Nanette is the wife of the show producer, Pete Reitmeier. So, Nanette, we really appreciate you being on, and Pete arranging for you to get here. So,
thanks for having me.
Yeah. You can join us 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. So, Nanette, what's the importance of this? How critical is it to have this conversation? Why is it critical to have it?
Well, let me step back a little bit and tell you something that I always find a little puzzling. I give a lot of talks, presentations throughout the Northern Kentucky community, and I often begin by telling my audience, did you know since the inception of our country, the United States of America, that the death rate has not changed? And they look at me in shock. I always get a few that kind of twitter, and they say, it hasn't? And I said, no, it's still 100%. So it's one of those things where death is inevitable. But for some reason in the United States, we like to think about it as it being optional. If we don't talk about it, it's not going to happen. And that's an untruth. So it's very important for us to be able to speak with our families, our close friends, those who we choose to help us decide what's going to happen at our end of life, to honor our wishes. And they have to know what those are. We can't expect them to read our minds.
Yeah. Barbara, do most people recognize the importance of this, do you think?
Well, I think that we're seeing an uptick in people's interest and openness to what we call advanced care planning. So I run Conversations of a Lifetime out of Hospice of Cincinnati, which is a program that really works with physicians to give them the communication skills and their staff to talk about advanced care planning, but also a community component. And we're finding that folks from all walks of life and really all generations are becoming more open to the idea of advanced care planning and having those conversations early before there's ever a healthcare crisis on the horizon. Because if we have those conversations early, then people have a much better idea how to make decisions on behalf of their loved one.
Explain what you mean, advanced care planning. What kinds of things does that cover?
So it's just kind of a fancy name for starting to have the conversation about what's important to us as individuals. Everyone's values are different. Everyone wants a little something different from the healthcare system. And our healthcare system in this country is really geared to give everybody everything, whether or not that may be in their best interest. So starting the conversations and then having that dialogue and then documenting those wishes in the form of what we call advance directives. So the healthcare proxy, which is the paper that names somebody to make those decisions for you if you can't speak for yourself, and also the living will, which is to get a little bit more specific about what you might want or not want in a healthcare crisis situation.
Sandra, more and more people are starting to recognize the value of doing this, but I still get the sense that not enough people are having this conversation. Is that your impression?
Yes, that's very true. Nationally, the rate of people that do have advanced directives is roughly 30%. Some communities are much higher. And there's been a lot more publicity recently about the importance of end-of-life planning. And in many ways, we think it's really a message of empowerment. You know, we tell people to kind of speak up, think about what they want and be heard so that they can have the kind of end-of-life experience they'd like. But still, even though people recognize it's important, there are a lot of people that just don't quite have the conversation. It's awkward. It can be a hard conversation, but it's really, really important.
Northern Kentucky, we also have what we call the Conversation Project, and it's run by Bluegrass Care Navigators, and we offer it through each county. I'll be hosting the one in Carroll County along with my team at Bluegrass Hospice Care. And we have them in Kenton County and Campbell County as well. We direct our encouragement to have the conversation to the citizens, the patient, so they are able to bring it up with their physician. I know Barbara was saying that you deal with you encourage physicians to have that conversation. We've just taken a different approach to encourage families to have that conversation with one another and to have that with their physicians as well. Kentucky also has the MOST form that in addition to a living will and advance directives, that a person can fill out that directs, do they want to be resuscitated? Do they want to have antibiotics? How long do they want to be in the ICU and various other things? And so we have those resources available, but not everybody knows about it.
Barbara, a few generations back, people oftentimes, they died at home. And how have things changed over the years in terms of how we handle end of life?
Well, I think one of the main influences on how we handle end of life now is that we have so much terrific technology at our fingertips in the medical field, lots of advances, lots of miracles. And I think that our physicians who are wonderfully trained to treat have somehow slipped to the side about thinking about offering. Do you want this treatment? Here's what that treatment might look like. Here's how you might feel on that treatment. Here's the benefit you might get from that treatment, particularly as we're finding our patients are older and sicker with a number of conditions at the same time. There's lots of things that we can offer to them from the medical establishment, which may or may not at the end of life really extend life. And so I think Sandra, I know, probably has some thoughts about this as well. And I think it's really full circle back to getting physicians a little bit more comfortable with just bringing up the idea of what's important to you and does this treatment or does this path fit what's important to the patient?
Yeah, that's very true. It used to be much more normal for people to die at home, and then people have gotten a little bit caught up in the idea that medicine can do anything. But that's one place that hospice care can really help. And hospice care primarily is designed to take care of people in the home with family support. And it's really a six-month benefit. We find so often people wait until the very last few days, sometimes hours, to request hospice care or to be open to hospice care. But that's the one place that utilization of hospice nationally is growing. And the hospice caregivers go into the home, help the family support the loved one who in many cases would prefer to die at home and really give that full-fledged support to make that possible.
Hospice care is the one place where we actually want to see a longer length of stay. For those of us in the healthcare business, we know that there's a lot of push for patients to be out of the hospital or the acute care setting. So we want the length of stay to be high in hospice care. It's better for the patient and their family.
You find there's resistance sometimes from people when they hear hospice, they automatically think, no, I do not want to do this.
H word.
Yeah.
Yes. We hear it regularly.
Yeah.
Because many times, we're not going to go with hospice because that means we're giving up all hope.
Or, and that's definitely not the case.
No, and there are some other myths of hospice too. For example, one of the biggest myths that we still face today is that people think, hospice is only for A, people that have cancer, and B, people who are within 2 weeks of dying. And that's not true. It's actually the Medicare benefit is 6 months. What that means is someone whose disease process were to take its expected outcome, the prognosis is 6 months or less.
And some people can be in hospice longer than 6 months, and some people, of course, much shorter. But that issue of giving up is so important. And what we always say is it's not giving up, it's speaking up.
Well, and I think some people don't realize, too. They think that if I enter hospice, I'm never coming out. Right. And that's not the case, is it?
Correct. Well, you can certainly elect to come in and out of hospice. The vast majority of people that come in do die in hospice. But, you know, one of the other myths, you do have to give up your quote-unquote curative treatments to enter hospice care in general. But the truth is, if the treatments were really curative, you wouldn't even be having that conversation. And so often people come into a hospice program and they stop getting treatments that are not agreeing with them and might actually be making them sick, and they do better. And some studies have shown that on average, people in hospice care live 39 days longer than people that aren't in hospice care. But people wouldn't expect that.
How do you address when a family member fights the idea of a patient going into hospice? How do you explain it to them? It's not the patient in this case. It's the family member saying, no, I don't want them going in.
Yeah. Happens a lot.
It happens quite a bit. Yeah. And sometimes even it's just not them entering hospice, but the kinds of treatments that can occur in hospice or outside of hospice that often a family member will fight. If I can share a story with you, because of privacy reasons, I'm kind of changing things a bit. But at any rate, we had an elderly woman with end-stage lung disease, entered hospice, made it very clear what she wanted and what she didn't want. Part of that process is she lost her appetite and didn't want to eat any longer. We had to have a family conference, and there was one son who, when we came in to have this conversation in the patient's living room, looked at me and says, you've got to declare my mother incompetent so we can put a feeding tube in her so that she can live longer. And I said, well, she's made it very, very clear. This was all complicated by the fact that she had very early dementia, but still very oriented at this point. And she made it clear, no feeding tubes, I want nothing. We were able to provide what her wishes were because luckily she had them all written out. And he looked at me and he said, but if it were you, wouldn't you want to keep fighting? So my response to that was, because it was not his mother's wishes, I said, well, we all know that if it is you, that that's what you want. You've made it quite clear, but let's talk about mom. Unfortunately, he got angry and left. But
they're going to have somebody who thinks that if they enter, they never come out. If they enter, that they're giving up. I guess that's what he was thinking.
That's the concept. We were just discussing this before we came on air, that it's our culture in the United States to fight, to win, to whether it's
win
in
the
athletics,
battle.
Win the battle. You know, we battle against cancer. We have to win the game, win the championship. So we're giving up. But it's really a matter of choosing. So sometimes we don't get to choose what diseases we suffer from, but we can choose what we want and how we can die.
And one of the other things about hospice care that sometimes gets lost is I think we have a lot of specializations. One is really managing symptoms well. So in many cases, the patients get much more comfortable. People understand they want the best cancer specialist, the best heart specialist, and the doctors and nurses in hospice are really specialists at managing complex symptoms at the end of life. And once that patient is comfortable, then our goal is to find ways to make that the best possible experience, to bring them moments of joy, to reconnect them with their families, to have them spend time in their garden. Whatever it is for each individual person, that's really what a hospice program tries to accomplish for the people that they take care of. And I think that's something else that gets lost, that you can get comfortable and you can find moments of laughter and love and joy while you're going through a hospice experience.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation, if you've ever had a loved one in hospice care or ever sat down and had that end-of-life discussion with a loved one, you can share your story with us. 513-419-7100. Barbara, you talk to doctors a lot. How tough is it when there is a surgeon or a specialist who pushes the patient to take more treatments, to continue forward, when the patient's just done?
That's a great question. I think that many of our physicians, as I said, are so specialized and trained to treat that we have the opportunity to remind them, to coach them in some communication skills and a team approach. So we're not putting it all on the physician, not all on the specialist or the primary care doc, but they do have a role in helping open the door to talk to the patient and their family about what the goals of care are, what's important to that patient and family, and then does the treatment plan fit those goals? And it's definitely an opportunity. The training that we do for physicians is really just around basic communication about how to start the conversation for advanced care planning. And physicians tell us that they know it's an important conversation. They're not really sure how to start it. They haven't really had any training in it. And so the curriculum that we use was developed by physician experts in the field of patient-physician communication. But when we also train their nurse practitioners and their folks in their offices or in their clinics to be part of that team, so everyone is open to being conversation ready around goals of care, that really does make a difference.
So where do you start? When do you start? How do you get this whole conversation going?
We say the sooner the better. And so for an 18-year-old to have the conversation is important. It's going to be different and probably a little bit simpler than for a 55-year-old, than for an 85-year-old with multiple conditions. But really, anything can happen to us. I mean, one of us could leave here and have something untoward as we cross the road to the parking lot. And so it would be helpful for people in our lives to know if something big happened, what's important to you, what do you want the outcome to be? So it changes as the life course progresses, but it's really important. And the sooner you start to talk about it, the more comfortable you and your friends and your family get with the conversation. And we love to be in denial. It's a very powerful human emotion. And so we just kind of nudge our way past that denial and find ways to really open up and say, please tell me what's important to you. So if I'm ever in the position to make a decision for you, I know what you want.
You know, you talk about being in denial, but isn't it a case of if you get this done, you get it out of the way and you do it properly, then you don't have to think about it.
Right. Until another 10 years or so, until a major life change. That's
right.
True. That's a great motivation, right? And then to also, I also want to say that when you choose your healthcare proxy, the person that's going to speak for you, if you can't speak for yourself, two things, make sure they know that they're your healthcare proxy, they know what your wishes are, and that they're able to follow through on those. Because what we do find is people tell us, oh, yeah, I did that 10 years ago. It's in my file cabinet at home. And we'll say, well, does your nephew know that he's your proxy? Oh, no. We're pretty sure he can just, you know, he knows what I want. And so, again, it's that conversation, facilitating that conversation, which is really the nub of advanced care planning.
And there's really never a wrong time to bring things up.
That's
in
true.
Fact, at our house one Christmas, I had ordered through my church the church photo for the church album and for the church directory, and was sent extra photos rather than just the two that I ordered. So, kind of as a joke, I had these 8x10 photographs framed, wrapped up, gave to each of my sons and to various family members. So Christmas morning, my two boys are opening up, and they looked at it, and they said, oh, this is a nice picture of you, Mom. And my oldest son said to me, are you trying to tell us something? And I said, and what would that be? He goes, this looks like something you'd put out at a funeral. Are you sick? And I said, no, I'm not. But, you know, being a hospice family, they're used to having these discussions. And I said, but this is a good time for us to at least talk about a few things. Mm-hmm. So there we are, Christmas morning, Christmas tree lit. We exchanged, this is what your dad and I would like if something were to happen. And then a little later on with our Christmas celebration. To make use of those situations.
And is there a sense of relief after you do that?
Actually, it is, because it's on the table. They know that we're not denying that something could happen. They're aware of what our wishes are.
Mm-hmm. 513-419-7100, and let's talk to Mary Ann. Hi, Mary Ann.
Hi. Yeah, I was just wondering, how early would one go into hospice? Is it typically, you know, a terminal situation? Or if someone is aging and declining in health, you know, how early can they choose hospice for care?
The hospice benefit, the definition of it is that if they do have to have an illness that would be terminal with a normal expectancy of 6 months, and you do have to have physicians certify that that illness is in place. So it isn't really designed for people that are just really aged and debilitated. You have to have a terminal illness that might be expected to take your life within 6 months. Many people that are in hospice live longer than that, and you can recertify, but that's the general rule of thumb for admission.
Let's talk to Kristen now. Hi, Kristen.
Hello.
Go right ahead.
My father entered in hospice. He was diagnosed with end-stage melanoma, and not only did the hospice do amazing job with helping my father and helping him come to terms with the end of his illness, but helping my sister and I with those last couple weeks of his life and even afterwards, and helping us with grief. And I think a lot of people recognize hospice as those for those who are passing away, but it's also for those that are left behind. So I have to thank the hospice center that we were at for the help that they've given us afterwards.
Well, I think that's a really great point, and I'm glad that that was your experience. And there are two important priorities with, there are many, but two in particular. Hospice is designed to care for the family as well, and everybody that's going through a death needs kind of help and needs grief support. At Hospice of Cincinnati, we have a dedicated grief center that provides grief services to the community free of charge, and we sponsor Fernside Center for Grieving Children. So we really take our kind of responsibility and opportunity to care for people that are grieving really seriously, because it can make a big difference in terms of people's ability to move on with life and be kind of back to being productive members of society.
Let's talk to Karen. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I just wanted to thank them for making the point of every battle isn't worth fighting as far as when you're at the end of life. My mother was 51 when she had a massive stroke, eventually had rectal cancer, had to have a leg amputated. She had more cancer, brain seizures, and everything. And I remember going back and telling someone that she just wanted to go home and be done with everything. And they just looked at me and they said, oh, she's giving up?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, she hasn't been able to speak for 27 years. I don't think she's giving up.
Aww.
She just wanted to die with the dignity.
And
you know,
she
had no control over her entire life. And you guys in hospice gave her that dignity and the ability to die with it and the control of it. And, you know, I'm in healthcare, I'm in home health. I can't tell you how much I talk about you guys and how wonderful you can be. And it is just a shame that there's so much pushback at times.
Thank you. And I'm so sorry you had to go through that. That
yeah.
Sounds like a really tough situation.
Well, you know what? The joke was always on everybody else because my mother was the happiest, most content person in the world and had a spirit that was just unbelievable. So even with all of her issues, she was truly happy and at peace. And boy, the second she had her last breath, I could just feel it, that she was finally at peace.
Karen, thank you so much. We appreciate the call. And let's talk to, also, this is Karen. Hi, Karen. Okay, must have been the same line there. So, advice one last time for us. How do you get this conversation rolling?
So, I'm going to suggest folks go to conversationsofalifetime.org. It is our website that is specifically for patients and families and community members to start the conversation, look at tools. There's some video clips on there. There are the legal forms if you get to that point, but really a number of very soft intro ways to start thinking about initiating the conversation. Things you shouldn't wait to say and things you shouldn't wait to do are two of our community campaigns, really engaging families across generations to start thinking about expressing those wishes.
In Northern Kentucky, you can check out the Bluegrass Care Navigators Facebook page for on social media, and we have links to the various county program conversations that are free to the public that they may RSVP and receive helpful hints, manners, and ways to bring those conversations up at home.
Mm-hmm. And Sandra, final thoughts here on getting this rolling?
Well, thanks. I think the thing I would say is it is important to bring it up. And once you do, if there is pushback, it's easy for people to say, oh, I don't want to talk about that now. But take that next step and say, no, this is really important. And I want to be sure that I can help you the way you've helped me in my life. And make sure you kind of follow through with the conversation.
Well, Annette, Matt, Barbara, and Sandra, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Associate Medical Director with Bluegrass Care Navigators, Dr. Nanette Bernalis, and from Hospice of Cincinnati, President and CEO Sandra Lobert, and Project Administrator Barbara Rose. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition. You can find archives of our programs at WVXU.org. The producer for today's show was Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer was Selena Reeder. Rick Andres was the technical director. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now, coming up next on 91.7 WVXU.